I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This obviously is the Henry fan club, and we should mention he wore a tie, which was an absolute touch. Howard, did you ever get close to wearing a tie in the tent?
No, not at all. I mean, the first couple of weeks, it's definitely chilly. I did invest in some thermal underwear for the first week. But no, not a tie. And I think after that, when it starts to warm up a bit, you wouldn't want to wear one, would you?
Well, hello and welcome back to the second episode of The Bakedown, here dissecting the week that was in the bake-off tent. I'm the founder of Bake with the Legend, Josh Laddie. Once again, I'm delighted to be joined by former contestants Jane Beadle and Howard Middleton. Howard, week two on bake-off. It feels like the country's woken up. Bake-off's back. It feels like the summer's sort of ending. That's the only negative of being back into the swing of bake-off, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I don't think the summer's ended. No, I think that's the wonderful thing about Bake Off. It just keeps it going that bit longer, doesn't it? It is eternal Bake Off summer.
I'm just thinking people have gone back to school this week. It just feels that's what I was thinking, Jane.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I don't know. It's really difficult. When I think of Bake Off, I think of summer. I think because it's filmed earlier on in the year. Yeah, no, it doesn't make me sad at all. I'm just very happy to have it back on the box again.
Absolutely. So are we. So, yeah, two down, eight to go in terms of the episodes for this year. We asked you to get in touch with us at the Bakedown at bakewithalegend.com, and many of you have been sending in your thoughts and comments, so thank you for that. We'll come on to a few of them later in the show. Just, Howard, in terms of week two, you've obviously, in your mindset, I'm assuming, relieved you've got past week one when you're a contestant, because no one wants to go first. How much prep did you get from sort of getting home after week one and doing a bit of prep for week two? But then are you thinking in your head, well, you want to do a bit of prep for what you think might be coming in week three and four? And it's worth remembering, actually, your order of the weekly themes was a little bit different. You had bread in week two to go home and prepare for.
Yeah, and I think it's difficult when you, during the week, knowing what you can actually do in terms of preparation. I think it's... You've obviously prepared the recipes in advance, but actually trying to find time, particularly if you're working full time, trying to find time during that week to do some preparation. And I tried, I suppose, I remember at one point trying to get ahead of myself with some of the future weeks, and eventually it sort of catches up with you and you think, oh, I'm just... snowed under here.
And just to clarify, you were working for the council at the time.
I was at the time,
so
yeah.
You've left the tent on a Sunday night. You've gone back to Sheffield.
Yeah.
Were you in work on Monday morning?
Yes, exactly. And trying to think, well, in actual fact, I tried to book a day off during the week to do a bit of practice. But it's hard. It's really, really hard. And particularly if when you take that day off, let's say it's a Wednesday and you're doing a bit of practice during the week, and stuff goes badly, it's, you sort of think, is it worth me going this weekend? You know, can I really do it again?
Oh, it's interesting that, I mean, just Jane, then, for you, was it different. You had your own business and the gardening. I know you did some of your recording also during the week. So how did you find the balance of doing your preparation?
For me, it was a lot easier than for a lot of other people because I could choose when to work and when not to work. But I think for everybody, the gap between filming and then going home and then coming back again isn't always the full week that everybody sees, because they have to juggle their schedules. They have to juggle to suit crew and the judges. Maybe they're doing something else. So I think our worst one was we got home on a Sunday night and then were back down there at the hotel on the Tuesday evening to be filming Wednesday morning. So there was absolutely no time to be doing any practice. That was extreme, and it was never again was it as bad as that. And I don't know whether they've changed that, but there isn't much time to practice. You know, to be realistic, a television program has to be shot at certain times to suit certain things, and they're on a very, very tight schedule, and we are just part of that schedule, so we're all in the same boat. That's the nice thing.
Absolutely. Everyone's, you know, got to deal with the same circumstances. I guess that's the positive. We've had a few questions in, as I mentioned, from some of the listeners. Veronica Howard, she wants to know, who does the washing up? That's Veronica's question. She's fascinated to know who does washing up. I presume it's not you.
It's not you in one sense. It's interesting because everybody's... Most people have got a sink at the end of their workstation, and the idea is that you're supposed to put your washing up in the sink, and then somebody miraculously comes along, sort of scoots along the surface of the tent, and takes whatever is in the sink and takes it into the back and washes it up. Which is lovely because it is like having little kind of pixies that take your washing up away. The problem is that quite often you will use something and then 5 minutes later you think, oh, I could do with that again. And it's now gone in the back being washed up. So I tended as much as possible to try and do my own washing up, just sort of rinse it through, because it may be gone for a good 10-15 minutes and then you're hanging around waiting for this bowl or spoon or whatever to come back from the back of the tent.
Well, I was saying, ingest the idea of doing your washing up. Amazing dedication that you managed to bake and do a bit of washing up. Jane, were you in the same camp there, doing a bit of your own washing up?
Well, I did if I really needed it. I think when I look back, I was really messy and terrible at caramels, I think I mentioned in the last podcast. So the poor lady who did the washing up, she does most of it, doesn't she? Must have had about 6 caramel encrusted saucepans of mine on one episode, I think, on one bake. I didn't do too much. I just sort of handed it over. And then you did find on a really complicated bake that all the bowls at the back of the tent will have been used. Yeah. So we could go and help ourselves.
That lady's probably thinking, I hope Jane goes in week one or week two, week three. As you got all the way to week 10,
you've ruined it for week.
So that's the question about who washing up. The washing up is done by someone who you just never see on camera. Of course, that's the answer. Jane, we've had a question in from Rebecca who emailed thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. She wants to know about your application journey to get onto Bake Off. So is it that you do an application in writing? Do you have a phone call? What happens?
I think technically we're supposed to keep it quiet, what the application, the whole audition process is. But yes, if you're interested in applying, do look for the application form. It's probably online already.
It is. I've seen it advertised looking for people for next year.
It's about as long as your arm. And you can see the sorts of questions they're asking you and what you need to have practiced. And obviously that you can't be an expert at all of it, and don't be put off. But for my first year, I thought that one photo of a bake would be enough to get me through. I applied 3 times. I think many of the good bakers do. I think Nancy applied 3 times. I think, I think so. And Candice certainly applied more than once. But it'll give you a good indication of what you should have some expertise in. I would say, given Paul's there, you always need bread. And it's a very long, but don't be put off by it, because each year they're looking for something else. So you might put an answer in one year that they were unimpressed by that would then be what they're looking for the next year. Just give it a go, I would say. But yeah, download it and start filling it in and taking pictures of your bakes, which is very important.
Okay, so we've got the application process, and then presumably, I know you don't want to say too much, but there's a you might, if you develop through that process, get invited to come to some audition days, and eventually it's whittled down to 12.
Yes, they'll interview you first to see whether actually you can speak, because it's very important to have somebody that
you can have a camera in your face the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't want you clamming up all the time. And then, yes, you have to take some bakes off to auditions. You get interviewed about that. And yeah, you do a lot of that. And then you'll do a bake with them, just to make sure that actually you haven't just taken your mum's cake along every time.
Howard, did you apply more than once? Was that your first attempt?
No, it was my first attempt. And I think I was quite naive, actually, because I think had I perhaps practice certain things a bit more, I think I could have done better. So I would certainly make sure that all the I was pretty good at kind of cakes and bread and pastry, but not so good at kind of more complicated techniques. And I think if you give yourself a bit more time to do some of that practice before you apply, it's better, really.
Okay, the final question we've got time for today. Ben wants to know, have you ever met a Bake Off star from another country? Because, of course, Bake Off has gone all around the world with huge success in so many different countries. Have you ever come across or been contacted maybe online by someone from a different country? Jane, anyone ever reached out to you?
No, to be honest, I wouldn't know 100%, because there are American Bake Off people and we all have a big following from the US. But whether any of them have been on Bake Off, they haven't made themselves known. So I haven't met one.
Interesting. Howard, anyone?
I think I might have got some Facebook friends and people who might have been on
in America.
In America, yeah. and other countries, yeah. So I'm pretty sure I have.
We should mention this American thing, because even at Bake with Legend classes, we're always amazed by the amount of American visitors we have here who want to come to the baking classes led by yourselves and other Bake Off alumni. It was on a few years after. I think it was on PBS. And I think what was very interesting, I saw an announcement that this year Netflix are showing it in America just a few days after it's aired in the UK, which is a really exciting development for those who, you know, from the 2019 series. But was yours, did you find sort of, did you get tweets like 3 years later from people in America?
Yeah.
Going, oh, you've had a great second week, Howard. I can't wait to see you next week.
I know. And it's so bad because you know how it's going to end. And you think, oh, that's really nice. I'm really glad you're still rooting for me. I can't tell you that I'll go out next week, but yeah.
Well, that's a lovely thing. And Jane, you get comments from America.
I get comments from America, and actually a few weeks ago I was visiting my daughter who lives in Barcelona at the moment, and I just scanned my passport and the doors that open into this awful holding pen that is the terminal that I was using, and there's this voice bellowed out, American, going, I know you, you're from that baking show. And I turned around and went, oh, hello, and smiled. And she clearly was so embarrassed about it, she avoided me for the rest of the rest of the wait. So I think it's absolutely lovely. I love the fact that social media enables us to talk to some of these wonderful people in the US who are brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, not only did 15 or so million people watch your final, it's now, you know, people around the world that are able to tune
it. Do you know they had it on, I think it was on British Airways. It was actually one of the things that you could have watched last year. And I thought that would have been bizarre, sitting next to somebody who was watching you baking in a tent. That would have been very strange.
You'd have been watching them watching you in a tent.
And hoping that they wouldn't recognise you.
And then being served a little bit of cake as your dessert, possibly, on British Airways. Week two was, of course, Biscuit Week. So, Janie, in your series, Biscuit Week was week two. Howard, your week five was the Biscuit in Trays week. So you had sort of different experiences there. But, Jane, just coming to you for your week two, you in your week made flower pot iced biscuits. You then had to do 12 Viennese whirls, and you had to make a gingerbread scene. How do you remember your biscuit week, Jane?
Somebody said, I don't remember who it was this week, said that it's the worst week. Oh, It's awful having to do gingerbread structures. It's just awful. And iced biscuits. I'd never iced a biscuit in my life. So to then do that and hope I was going to get it all done. Actually, I then had to do it at the Christmas special last year. So I was a little bit better at it then. Biscuit week. Can we just do nice biscuits rather than iced ones or ones you stick together? Biscuit week doesn't really do it for me. And I think they had a really, really hard time of it this week. I felt so sorry for them.
Howard, it was Michael, I think, who they showed the clip of saying that Biscuit Week is the one that perhaps people aren't looking forward to. Do you agree with that? I mean, I'm just looking back at the notes here from your week. You had a breakfast tray bake, 18 twills, and a Japanese pagoda tea tower was your showstopper.
Oh, yes, I remember that. I think because you're mixing with fellow bakers, I definitely went in. If people get the opportunity to see that episode, I definitely went into Biscuit Week with a hangover. Oh, I was so green. Terrible. And
what had been happening that week or the night before?
I was just drinking with bakers.
Who was your fellow drinker that you were? Because you mentioned in the last episode you like drinking.
It was Christine Wallace. Was, sure. Yeah. And Glenn. Yeah. We were the ones who tended to kind of prop up the bar a little bit too late into the night. And Christine, I will be forever grateful for introducing me to paracetamol with caffeine. I remember it really helped that morning. But I love
the idea that there's like a producer in their late 20s who has to come and pat you on the shoulder at about 1 a.m. on a Friday night and go, Howard, I think you've had enough.
I think you need to go to bed.
Yeah, is that what happened?
I think they probably left us to it. They should have done that. I'm pretty sure they should have done that. I think it was remiss of them not to.
Were there any others you were trying to get to come along to the drinks? You thought, well, they look a bit good. If we need to get them
I didn't see it as a competitive thing. And I think that's the danger, isn't it? When you stop seeing it as a competitive thing and you just allow your drinking habits to take over. Right. But that tray bake they absolutely hated. And the tweel, I came bottom in that technical challenge.
Did you so, really? Yeah. I'm going to have to watch that again.
It was all resting on a biscuit tower. What a dramatic phrase.
Yeah. I love that.
Jane, talk it through. Signature, 12 decorated chocolate biscuit bars, 2.5 hours. They were asked for one biscuit element coated in chocolate, and they wanted them beautifully decorated. And Paul made a real point of talking about getting the right texture for the chocolate. Is that a challenge you'd have looked forward to?
That I would have looked forward to. I can't imagine many people have done their own chocolate coated biscuits. It's not something you sit at home thinking, I know what I'm going to do this weekend. I'm going to make some lovely chocolate-coated biscuits. I mean, most of us really struggle with tempering chocolate. It's a really difficult thing. And dealing with chocolate, I don't know what the weather would have been like. Week two, it probably was cooler, so probably better than further down the series when the weather gets warm. I think it was a really hard challenge, I think. Interesting that a couple of them went for marshmallow filling. I thought that was interesting. That was making life difficult for them. Nougat was something that then came up. I thought that was an interesting choice because nougat in a biscuit bar actually could have gone very chewy. I think Amelia got away with it. Lovely ideas, but actually making life very difficult for themselves. I think they did well. I think the problem is 2.5 hours, you've got to get things cooled. If you're going in with a warm caramel, and I know I make caramel at Bake with a Legend classes, and yeah, ones that don't actually coat the pan and ruin the saucepan, but yes, I can actually make caramel
outside
of the tent.
Jane,
you have seen it happen. But actually trying to get it to cool in the time is really difficult. And then you're going to put chocolate in. So I think a lot of them were understandably ambitious. But I thought it was a very hard challenge for second week.
Howard, what would you have gone for, do you think, here? Would you have gone sort of shortbread? Number of contestants went shortbread or gingerbread. What direction would you have taken this in?
I don't know. It's quite interesting. I'd probably have done a kind of buttery biscuit. Whether it would have been a shortbread or not. I'm not sure. Or as you say, it could have been a gingerbread in there. I think they were probably told, I don't think it was particularly made clear, but I think they were probably told that there needed to be a number of different elements within the bars. And so I think that's why they were trying to introduce other things as well as biscuit and chocolate. Mm. I think they probably needed at least one other element in there.
One thing that I had to Google was ruby chocolate. I didn't know a huge amount about ruby chocolate. Is that something you've come across, ever done any baking with?
I've never done any baking with it. The only thing is, I know M&S had a ruby chocolate Easter egg this year, so it was a new one to me
until that point. Listeners, I mean, I had to look this up, but it's marketed as a fourth type of chocolate alongside dark milk and white, made from ruby cocoa beans and described as sweet yet sour. Have you tried it? I have tried it, actually.
I was demonstrating at a food festival, and there was a lady who lives locally to me who is a chocolatier. Is that the right word? Hmm. Anyway, but yes, she makes chocolates. And she was demonstrating this ruby chocolate, and I thought it was a really interesting flavour. Sour, I wouldn't say it was sour. I would say it almost has a natural raspberry hint. It was lovely. It was a really delicious chocolate, and they don't do anything to it. They don't add any flavouring to it. It's just naturally how it comes from these beans, which have been bred especially for this chocolate. It's worth getting hold of. I think it's really expensive, but it's a very pretty colour. It's quite a natural pink colour, and not as sweet as white.
Okay.
I love white chocolate, but it can be very sweet.
I look forward to nipping to M&S, did you say, and tasting it. How does it? Oh, you said there was an Easter egg.
I think they probably sold it.
I'll bring some in. I'll bring some in for next week's podcast.
That would be great. We had Howard the first example in this year's series where one contestant went over to help another. Michelle was desperately trying to help Jamie with his biscuits in the last couple of minutes, and that was a moment I enjoyed from this week's episode.
I think that is lovely. I remember that happened when I was doing the Christmas special a few years ago, that people do kind of rally round. But it's not always encouraged, is it? So I think the fact that bakers feel strong enough to say, no, I'm going to come and give you a hand with this, it just shows some of the camaraderie, really.
When you say it's not encouraged, what do you mean by that, just for the listeners?
I suppose to a certain extent, you are meant to concentrate on your own bake, you know. So I think particularly during a technical challenge, it would certainly be frowned upon if you went and assisted somebody else. But.
And, yeah, it's interesting. Again, that's something we were talking about, wasn't it? I think with the technicals, certainly for our year, if anybody even whispered to the person in front or behind, we were told there was no conferring. I noticed this year, actually, they are asking each other questions in the technical. Mm. But we were told our year, and I was talking to Richard from...
Richard Burr.
Yeah, Richard Burr from...
It's Nancy's year, isn't it?
Yeah, Nancy's year.
The fifth series, I believe.
Is it? I lose all the numbers of the series. Because we were told at one point, just rein it back a bit. Don't forget it's a competition. And Richard said, yeah, they were told the same because everybody's trying to help. But I think the lovely thing about Bake Off, I don't think it always happens in every series, but in many series, you want to succeed or survive on the strength of your own bake. You don't want to survive because somebody has dropped their tray of biscuits on the floor or hasn't got it all on a plate when you could have helped them. I don't think you're such a close-knit group that you don't want people to fail. You never want anyone to go home. So if somebody needs a bit of help just getting something on a plate, then you will, I think.
Just quickly, Howard, were there any that leapt up to you? I mean, Rosie's Virgin Mojito biscuit bars got some good praise. Prue said she loved them. Michelle's Bakewell bars were told that they were sort of unique, exquisite. Was there any that leapt out to you?
I'm going to sound terrible, aren't I? Like I'm an alcoholic or something. But I really loved the sound of Michael's lemon and rosemary ones that were inspired by Stratford gin. So, yeah.
Okay. But he left the gin out, didn't he? Oh, and he put gin in the icing.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gin in the icing.
But they did say it was perfect blend of flavours, even though his marshmallow wasn't quite right. And chunky but neat, which is something we all aspire to be.
Well, that's
really,
me. That's
it?
Me, Howard. Chunky but neat.
That's the feedback you're after. You're onto a road to Style Baker with a bit of feedback like that. Technical challenge. It was to make 12 fig rolls. Let me just quickly give us your experiences of making fig rolls. I don't think that's something you had to do in the tent. Is that, Jane?
No, I've never made a fig roll.
No.
In fact, I think I have eaten very few fig rolls in my life. I love figs, dried or fresh, but I always find them, they're a bit soft. They always seem a bit stale to me. It's just not one of my favourite things. So my experience of fig rolls is...
limited.
Very limited, yeah.
Howard, they were given 90 minutes and they were told it was very important to be accurate and that they had to make 12 altogether. And of course, another classic almost bake-off, Helena managed to only make 11.
Yes. I don't
know
what
she did. That's
quite a good effort. It's a good effort. I mean, you can sort of understand doing that if you're doing something like little buns that are, you know, one doesn't come out or something. But I don't know how she managed to do that.
There was almost a moment it looked like she was looking in the oven,
as
if she might have left it somewhere. I like the idea they've stopped recording and eventually someone's found it.
But also, it's really hard if you're cutting something into equal measures. To cut 11 and not 12. I don't know.
Tent. Of course, we had the moment where it looked like, you know, there was only 6 prepared. And then, of course, if you're cold, cut those in half. At least you got your 12.
But
how'd you get 11? I'm not sure. And Jamie went for this egg washing, which Paul wasn't wild about in the end.
The thing is with the technical challenge is they're quite mean. They will give you stuff on your bench that you don't necessarily need.
Oh, that's interesting. Deliberately.
Well, I don't know whether they deliberately, but you do. So you have to have a bit of knowledge. Is that corn flour? Is that something else? I remember putting a load of salt in. Also, they don't measure it out for you. And sometimes you think that they have. And I had to start again in a technical because I'd put too much salt in. Always taste it because you can really taste it. So I think he probably thought, well, why have I got an extra egg? They're trying to catch me out.
Yeah.
I'm going to egg wash my fig rolls. And he's probably of an age where he's never seen a fig roll, bless him. I mean, it used to be that something your granny would turn out on a Saturday. Oh, come around, lovely to see you, have a fig roll. He's probably never seen one.
Right, okay, so 20-year-old Jamie there with his egg wash fig roll that didn't really go for him. I think his description was like a sausage roll and tough. That was the feedback he got. He ended up coming 11th. Only Helena's were worse, and that was she made 11 and they looked awful. Had she made 11 beautiful ones, she might have found herself a bit higher up, Howard, maybe.
Yes, exactly. I think it's hard to know what a beautiful fig roll looks like.
Is there
such
a thing? I'm not sure there is such a thing.
I mean, the exemplary ones that they always have in the judges' tent, they did look absolutely lovely.
They did.
But they didn't look particularly like fig rolls. Normally, fig rolls, if you buy the kind of shop-bought fig rolls, they're much, much flatter.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
And although it said to put a fork on top to press them down a little bit, you know, that it had only been done very, very delicately.
Yeah. Very delicately. Alice came first with David second, but, you know, Alice was, you know, the good colour. They were identical. We mentioned in episode one how even before the bookmakers had seen a moment of this year's series, they'd installed her as favourite. And, it was a fairly impressive technical challenge for her, Howard.
Yes, it was. I think Alice really started to show that she's... I think she was surprised. I mean, I think people are always surprised when they get, you know, high up in the technical challenge. It's quite interesting. I remember that when I did, I think, the first technical challenge, you are literally waiting for your number to be read out. And these, and you think, when is it me?
Yes.
You know, you think, have they forgotten mine? Because you can't believe that you've got so high up.
They really are done blind, aren't they?
There's absolutely no
element that they might know.
No. And although you might try and guess what they are, I remember there was one occasion where we saw some cream cheese going into the tent and we thought, oh, it's going to be cheesecake this week with the technical challenge. And it was nothing like that. So I think they were probably just the crew's sandwiches.
Just playing mind games on you. Finally, the showstopper this week, the challenge was to make an edible masterpiece of a 3D biscuit sculpture. Looking for, you know, some really impressive pieces of work that were done there, Jane.
Well, I thought they did some stunning absolutely stunning sculptures. I mean, there were several that I could name. I mean, the lamb, again, back to Alice, the lamb in the pen was so clever, putting those macaroons on. I thought it was so clever. David's was brilliant. I mean, I could go on. I don't want to really single out any of them. The one I did feel really sorry for, actually, was Amelia's. Because she numbered these things. Yes, the swimming with dolphins. Because they said they wanted to a sculpture. Now, if you're baking a biscuit and you want it to be 3D and you're modelling it out of clay, it's really hard to bake that. So a lot of them assembled their biscuits. Now, poor old Amelia had numbered her biscuits, which was very precise of her, and then put them together. And then she was criticised for it, for assembling. But then somebody else came up and they'd got assembled biscuits and they weren't criticised. So I thought she got a bit of a hard time about that.
This was Paul having a go at what he called stacking.
Yes, what he called stacking.
Because he said he wanted to see the dough as if it was clay.
Yes, and I don't think anybody did that. You'd never have got it baked.
No, I think the only time was if they'd done it within kind of moulds almost, you know, sort of half bowls,
yes,
like the body of the chicken and the lamb and things like that. But there were still elements of individual biscuits being, yes, glued together.
I mean, the cat was glued together, the ginger cat, which I thought was absolutely charming. I thought it was a lovely idea, but there were tubes of brandy snaps, there was a tube of a body, it was all stuck together in different ways, and I thought Amelia got hard press on that one.
They saved the spider, Helena's spider, to be the last one that was brought up for feedback. How does it fare to say it was probably the most impressive sculpture of those that were sort of put forward, or one of?
I think it was I think I've got a little bit of a gripe about this spider though. I
think, have you?
No, because it was, she'd come up with this idea of putting Earl Grey tea out of a tea bag and mixing that into the biscuit mix. And Prue said it was very original, and Paul nodded. And it just made me think, you know, you've forgotten that I did that for my biscuit.
Oh,
too.
Howard.
Yeah.
They'd forgotten about
They've
you.
Forgotten
write
about
in,
me
Howard.
Already.
You tell them.
We will be tweeting Paul to let him know that he forgot it. Was there anything else that caught your eye from these showstoppers, Jane? There were a couple of dragons.
There were a couple of dragons and a chicken. I mean, there were a lot of animals.
Yes.
I mean, the dragons, I think, it was Priya's dragon was described as a work of art.
Yeah, astonishing, I think.
But yeah, I mean, fantastic. The chicken, oh my goodness me, that chicken, how many biscuits? 212 individual biscuits she made that chicken out of. They're absolutely beautiful. I mean, I really feel bad about picking out anybody's because, you know, Michelle did a dragon. It was told it was a bit clumsy, but I thought it looked beautiful. I just, maybe Jamie's guitar was a bit simplistic, and we had an awful lot of innuendo about Henry's organ.
Yes.
Again, it's almost like they're trying hard for the innuendo. I think it happens naturally, to be honest.
I'm not sure he understood the innuendo as he was telling the Henry about it.
Bless him.
I'm not sure.
I feel bad. But I mean, he's 20. I feel bad even commenting on it because he seems so young. I mean, you know. And I thought they all did an absolutely stunning job. I'd have been proud turning out.
This obviously is the Henry fan club, and we should mention he wore a tie, which was an absolute touch. Howard, did you ever get close to wearing a tie in the tent?
No, not at all. I mean, the first couple of weeks, it's definitely chilly. I did invest in some thermal underwear for the first week. But no, not a tie. And I think after that, when it starts to warm up a bit, it you wouldn't want to wear one, would you?
We've got a few minutes left. We've got a segment of the show. We're calling it Self-Raising Selfies. This is where we want to hear your stories about when you've met a former Bake Off star. Email us in thebakedown@baitwithalegend.com. You can tweet us @baitwithalegend. Howard, I want to draw your attention to this one. Robin Davies has been in touch on email. I met Howard at the Ludlow Food Festival. He had just finished his demonstration, purchased his book, which I asked to get signed. He signed it Robin, R-O-B-I-N. I didn't have the heart to tell him, but it upsets me every time I see it. My name is R-O-B-Y-N.
Oh,
That's awful.
Howard, how did you make such an error?
I don't know. I almost put the wrong year on when somebody said, could you date it? I think after you've been
someone
doing...
Someone asked you to date your autograph?
Yeah.
That's an unusual request.
It is an unusual request. And I couldn't even remember what year it was. It was dreadful. If you've been doing demos, sometimes you're not concentrating on things. But I have to say, if Robin wants another book, I would happily... I am doing Ludlow again this year, but I would happily send her one that's written properly.
Written correctly. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Well, Robin, we'll get back in touch and we'll arrange that. The other comment we had in this week was from Millie Rogers. She said, during the 2014 series of Bake Off, I was in Costa and Mill Hill in London when in walked Richard Burr. Must have been 4 or 5 weeks into the series. He'd just been made star baker for the second time. I told him I thought he was amazing and I hoped he would win. Slightly starstruck, I asked if he'd sign my coffee cup, which he gladly obliged. Sadly, I lost the coffee cup when I was moving house, but he was a very nice man. I'll always remember that, which is a lovely moment. Jane, what was the most unusual thing you've been asked to sign?
Oh, I haven't been asked to sign anything unusual, but I will have a story about signing things incorrectly. When we did our book signing at the end of our final, so it was Andrew, Candice and I, and Andrew wouldn't trust us to write their names. So he'd be at the front of, so he'd write, to Howard, and then we'd just go, love Candice, love Jane. Well, we used to get some coming down that had cross outs because he got that name completely wrong.
Oh, no.
That's fantastic.
But no, I've only been asked to sign books and occasionally a program for whatever it is that I'm working at. No, fortunately, nothing
when
out
I
of the ordinary.
Was in Waitrose once. It was shortly after the episode where my custard had been used by somebody else, and somebody asked me to sign a packet of trifle sponges for them.
Oh, that's a nice moment. I hope they've still got them somewhere.
I hope so.
It's time for Howard's Hump. So, Howard, as with last week, we want to know something that gave you the hump from this week's episode.
It's not a hump as such with this episode. It's just the fact that we were told that in our year, and I think you were the same, Jane, that you couldn't use sort of moulds for things. And I think they've become much more relaxed about that. So we'd got Helena's witch's fingers, which were actually done directly into a shop-bought mould, weren't they? And I'm not convinced that Jamie had actually made his guitar mould. So I think, in a way, it's a hump with the fact that we couldn't do that. But actually, how sensible to be able to have relaxed the rules a little bit. And people can now use shop-bought fondant and moulds, which is what we all do in baking, really.
Yeah, I agree with Howard. We were the same. We weren't allowed to use any shop-bought cutters, or if we were using fondant, we had to make our own. And interestingly, back at the last Christmas special, the two of us, Andrew and I, were making our own fondant and making our own moulds and making our own cutters. And then Liam and Flo weren't. And I think, I agree with Howard, I think that's not a test of your baking by having to make that. We all buy it. That's not what they should be focusing on, whether we've used a shop-bought cutter. It's how we use it and how we bake that's
important.
So Jane
and I demand to be allowed back in the tent to have another go on the rules that they now have.
Yes, I think so. I think Howard and I are the first ones to sign up for that.
So it's time for Judge Jane, the point in the podcast where we want to know your opinion on whether the star baker and the person who left was the right decision. Did Paul and Prue get it correct? So, star baker, Alice got the nod, Jane. Was that fair?
Yes, I think it was fair. I mean, she seemed to do really well on all three challenges. Obviously, she won the technical. Her honeycomb peanut mallow bars were described as identical, nicely made and delicious. Well, obviously, we can't taste, but they looked pretty good to me. And I just loved her lamb in a pen. I thought it was the cutest thing. And to make all those macaroons as well, or macaron, I thought Rosie gave her a good run for her money because her chicken was fantastic. But I think Alice just edged it. So, yeah, happy with that decision.
And, of course, we were 13 at the beginning. Then we were 12 after Dan departed last week. Now it's only 11. Jamie was possibly lucky to stay in the competition last week, but his luck ran out this time.
Yes, sadly, his luck ran out. I thought Jamie was a joy to have on the programme, as all of them are, and it's always tough to really lose somebody. What has impressed me so much is how much, when they've had a disaster, they keep smiling, and Jamie smiled all the way through it. I should be sad to see him go. But I think, to be fair, each challenge, he didn't do very well. I mean, I wrote, oh dear, for his signature.
Not a good sign.
Which is not a good sign.
11th in technical.
11th in technical. I didn't think they looked that bad. It just shouldn't have been egg washed. But the guitar for his showstopper just didn't really come up to scratch. So very sorry to see him go.
Yeah, very likeable.
Incredibly likeable. And I'm sure everybody will miss him. But I'm afraid it was his time.
We'll wrap up here. It's been a wonderful second episode of Bake Off, and we all thoroughly enjoyed watching it. Do remember to continue to get in touch with us at the Bakedown at bakewithalegend.com. You can tweet us at bakewithalegend. And remember, do head to bakewithalegend.com/thebakedown to win a chance for you and a friend to come to Ian Cumming's class with us in London on the 14th of September. Jane Howard, thanks so much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.